This week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
Have him show us support and call a general strike sooner than later and tell Trump to keep ICE out of our communities.
A Chicago electrician urges UAW President Sean Fain to support a general strike.
They didn't just say nothing. They are actively sending reps around the country to start resolutions for Palestine. Shame!
Activists demand action from AFL-CIO labor leadership to end Palestinian genocide.
Federal workers are our friends and neighbors, they're our families, but they are also real everyday heroes. And right now, millions of them are on furlough, not getting a paycheck, and others are forced to come to work for free.
Air traffic controllers are facing a catastrophic situation with the federal government shutdown.
They can withhold their labor, reminding the employer that if the workers don't work, your enterprise becomes nothing. The machines don't work by themselves.
Economist Richard Wolff responds to the calls for a general strike. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Thomas O'Rourke. Chicago has been ground zero for Trump's attacks on immigrants and on state and local governments led by Democrats. Marcy Pedraza is an electrician and member of UAW 551 who works at the Chicago Ford Assembly Plant. She talked with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer about what she and her neighbors have faced in Chicago and why she is urging UAW President Sean Fain to support a general strike.
Marcy, first of all, why don't you talk about where you live and what kind of work you do?
Well, I live on the southeast side of Chicago. It's one of the furthest neighborhoods in the city, right by the Indiana border. I grew up in South Chicago, which is another neighborhood a little north of here, which once had all of the, you know, big steel mills and industry. My grandparents came to work in those mills and on the railroad. But now I live just, you know, nearby a neighborhood over called the East Side. And I work nearby in at the Ford Chicago Assembly Plant, which is in Hegwisch, not too far from my house. Same ward, actually. I've been a union electrician for 26 years. I started in construction. Now I'm in maintenance.
And the struggle in Chicago now is very important. In fact, on No King Day, the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, said that it's time for a general strike, that this is a fascist move by the Trump government. What has been your experience in what is going on in Chicago? And when did this first start?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's been going on for quite a few weeks now since the Trump administration has decided to terrorize our city with, you know, his ICE goons and thugs from the Department of Homeland Security, Border Patrol, threatening to send the National Guard, which, you know, have been deployed here, but they're staying in a nearby suburb, not allowed to assist in any, you know, activities as of yet because of pressure put on by our local electeds from the mayor to the governor of Illinois. And yeah, so this is, I think, week six or seven that we've been dealing with these, you know, this infiltration in our communities and the kidnapping of our neighbors in all parts of the city and nearby suburbs where working families live, where working people of color live. And as we all know, he's targeting mostly Latine families, brown people, black people, young people, working people, people on the street just trying to make a living, selling food or items, or even at Home Depots trying to get work. These are not so-called criminals, as he says. You know, maybe I think a small 1% might have a, you know, criminal background or whatever. But what defines a criminal, right? You know, it could be someone with a misdemeanor or whatever. You know, I don't know what the correct stats are as far as that, but they're just basically kidnapping our community members. And we've seen an influx in the past week in my neighborhood here on the east side, where there was a standoff between ICE agents and the community because the ICE cars, the vehicles that are driving around, big trucks, you know, out of state plates, tinted windows, you could see, you know, when they come out, they're wearing fatigues and masks. They had crashed into a car they were in pursuit of. And so it caused a commotion in an intersection while they were waiting, I guess, for tow trucks or backup or whatever. So community members came out. It wasn't an organized thing, obviously, because it was this not accident, I guess, on purpose. They crashed into this car to try to detain them. And so people came out. I was not there in person. I wasn't able to go, but people came out from nearby homes. Our rapid response team responded. They were on the street. You know, they were already patrolling the neighborhood, identifying cars and identifying ICE sightings to notify the community. So they showed up in full force, and it was about, see, 40 to 50 agents, I believe, on the ground, surrounded by a couple hundred community members, demanding that they leave the community alone. But eventually, the people were the community members were shot at with those, what are they, like the pepper bullets and the tear gas. So many people were affected and hurt by that. I mean, there was young people, there were, you know, people, families with small children and infants, not wearing masks, not wearing, you know, respirators or goggles, just people trying to protect their own neighbors. And even three teenagers were detained. One young man, young African American man outside of a Walgreens was detained just because he was running away from them, because they were inside Walgreens walking around like, you know, they're taking over everything. And he was running outside, and they threw him on the ground, took him away with no due process. And I think eventually later on, a few hours later, he was released, but obviously couldn't contact anyone. It was hard for his family to find him. And eventually, with the help of ICER, the organization that helps refugees and immigrants, they were able to help. And I believe the other teens were released as well, and other citizens that were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, or the right place, trying to defend their community. So, like I said, we've seen more activity this week too. You know, people are afraid to be out on their street. My own neighbors were having work done on their house, and they were asked by ICE agents if they were here legally. They said they were. Our houses are close together. There's a school almost every few blocks. So we'll say, hey, there's a report of a suspicious truck activity near so-and-so school. So we need to investigate. And it has happened where parents or people, grandparents even, are being detained, being picked up because they're dropping off kids to school, picking up kids. And they're not going after people like they say they are with warrants, or they don't show any warrants. They never, you know, seem to show any proof or evidence. It's just they're attacking the most vulnerable, elderly people. People probably without means of transportation. They're just walking around the street, walking to the grocery store, walking to take their families, you know, their kids to school. And it's, yeah, it's scary. And recently too, we've discovered that they are kind of using our parks areas as a staging ground, which they're not supposed to, because, you know, the mayor said can't use our city property to park your vehicles. But they've been staging near Steelworkers Park, which is on the southeast side, which is a site of where steel mills used to be, the US Southworks steel mill, and also Calumet Park Beach. But they're using the Coast Guard facility, which is federal property. Well, one of the big raids in the city recently was in South Shore on the 75th block of South Shore Drive, which is right on the lakefront property. This big apartment building that is, you know, been reported to be owned by slumlords and poorly maintained or taken care of. They had these Black Hawk helicopters rappel on the roof in the middle of the night, coming out like, you know, stormtroopers, kidnapping, snatching people out of their homes, and zip tying babies, their hands behind their back, throwing them in these U-Haul trucks with no due process. You know, no, some of them weren't even clothed. People were like half naked. This older African American gentleman was on the news talking about how he, you know, they just threw him in the truck and they couldn't even sit down, some of them, because it was so crowded. They had to stand for hours. He was elderly and just, yeah, imagine the terror from like being snatched from your home in the middle of the night by people that aren't identifying themselves, aren't showing warrants. And, you know, and like I said, this building is right on the lake. So what is their plan? Maybe to start clearing these places out so that they can work with developers who might have, you know, ties to the Trump administration to develop these properties, and that'll be right on the lake, kind of like what Trump has been talking about, making Gaza Lago, you know, like they just want more money for their rich real estate development pals, I guess.
And the working class community is under direct threat, it seems.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
this
it's not just yeah,
class.
it's there were mostly U.S. citizens in that building, so it wasn't just Latino folks. It was Black people too, you know, that just lived there and was trying to survive. And here they come; they get kidnapped in the middle of the night and get detained.
And what do you want to say to Sean Fain?
I would love to have him show us support and call a general strike sooner than later, and tell Trump to keep ICE out of our communities, stop attacking working families, to protect the very people that are part of your union, especially if you want to get reelected.
That was Chicago UAW 551 electrician Marcy Pedraza, who works at the Ford Chicago Assembly Plant and lives on the south side of Chicago, speaking with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
Gotta get ready, gotta get right. Gotta get ready for a general strike. Gotta get ready, gotta get right. Gotta get ready for a general strike. Gotta get ready, gotta get right. Gotta get ready for a general strike. Gotta get ready, gotta get right. Gotta get ready for a general.
You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Thomas O'Rourke. On Friday, October 24th, some 100-plus pro-Palestine labor activists heeded a call for national protest at the AFL-CIO headquarters in Washington, D.C. They demanded that it implement a labor boycott of Israel to stop the genocide in both Gaza and the West Bank. The activists also demanded that the AFL-CIO formally oppose the genocide and support the campaign to hold Israel accountable for war crimes and genocide. A petition stating these demands was hand-delivered to security officials in the lobby. Chris Smalls, a founder of the Amazon Labor Union, who recently participated in the 42-vessel Samud flotilla to Gaza, was one of the organizers. He and others delivered the petition and demanded an answer within a week. Dr. Jill Stein, former Green Party presidential candidate, also delivered remarks to the assembly. Notably, no official union presence in the form of banners or insignia was observed.
I'm pissed the f*** off. I'm really, really pissed the f*** off. Because as these folks walk past us, look out their windows, look from the balcony, for the last 2 years, over 680,000 Palestinians have died. For those who don't know, I'm not a DC resident, but I've been down here a few times, and I know for damn sure they don't park no cars here to block the entrance. But today, they chose to block the entrance. And they got a sign that says, life is better in the union. Right? And they represent 12.5 million unionized workers in this country. The largest voice for the working class is right here in this building. And the largest voice for the working class has said that they do not give a damn about Palestinian liberation. The largest Federation for the U.S. has said that Palestinian liberation is outside the scope of labor. And I got to remind them a history lesson here. That trade unions, if you didn't know, has always been a part of the resistance. Trade unions have been a part of Palestinian liberation since the first Nakba. We shouldn't be out here today, y'all. We shouldn't even have to do what we're doing today. As a labor leader who was invited into this headquarters 3 years ago, when my union won the first union for American workers for Amazon, when we got in this building, they gave us a tour. They showed us all the plaques of all the union presidents, all the 60 unions they have underneath this umbrella. They took us upstairs to that balcony right there. They gave us a tour, showing us the White House, which we don't give a damn about. At the same time, I asked them, what are we doing for workers right now? Because right now, single digits union density is in our country. Less than 6% in the private sector, less than 10% in the public sector. And union density is on the decline every single day. So who's really organizing? If they're not doing it, and they come in here with their nice salaries, comfortable cars, comfortable salaries, comfortable pensions, comfortable health insurance, for 2 years, as we all watch on our live stream, every single day, innocent Palestinians been slaughtered. Now I'm gonna take it a step further. 2 months ago, I was in prison in Israel for 5 days. Out of 21 volunteers, I was the only black volunteer on board of the Handela. The Handela was a 37th flotilla to try to break the illegal siege what Israel has imposed for over 2 decades. This didn't start on October 7th, y'all. And I didn't have no outside communication with y'all. I had no idea what was going on the outside. The only thing I did believe in was the power of people. Something spiritually was speaking to me while I was in prison. And something was telling me that something was brewing. I didn't know what it was. Every day, the warden or 12 generals would come in the room and they would stare me down, stare my cellmates down. And for some reason, I saw something in their face that changed after the first 2 days. Something was brewing. And it wasn't the politicians. It wasn't the U.S. Embassy. It wasn't your AOCs and Bernies. It damn sure wasn't the labor movement. It was the people. It was you guys. When I came home to JFK Airport in New York, I wasn't met by politicians. I wasn't met by the labor movement. I was met by the community. And that reminded me of the same fight that we took on against Amazon. $2.2 trillion company that has everything to do with this genocide. They invested $7.2 billion into Project Nimbus, which is the intelligence that is being used to target and surveil Palestinians every single day. And when people ask me, how the hell did you and this grassroots movement beat a $2.2 trillion company? The answer is simple, y'all. No amount of money in the world can amount to the power of people when we come together. And just like we came together to take on the richest company in the world in modern times, and even the richest man in the world at the time, Jeff Bezos, who made the most money during the pandemic, $13 billion a day, $9 million an hour, $5,000 a second. And we, the people, were able to take them down. And the reason we were able to take them down is because we brought people from all different backgrounds, all different generations, all different creeds together. We didn't give a damn whether he was on the left or right. Staten Island is a red borough. But the one common enemy is our boss, the 1% class. And just like Palestine has shown the world, we already won this battle, y'all. The public opinion for Palestine, we won that. We won that. The people of Palestine is showing us the way. They are telling us right now that they don't want sympathy, they want solidarity. They are telling us right now they want the world to come together for this one common cause. And the largest voice for the U.S. working class has said nothing. And they're demanding that. They didn't just say nothing. They are actively sending reps around the country to start resolutions for Palestine. Shame. So I'm the f*** off because I don't want to be here right now. I shouldn't have had to call this action today to bring people from all around the country, all different movements together. I shouldn't have had to do that. It should have been the workers who say that they are leading us that have done this. They should have been the one to already shut down the ports, just like our brothers and sisters in Italy and Greece. If they're the so-called voice for the working class, then they are not speaking the right tone right now. So we are here to deliver a petition that was signed by over 3,000 people today. And this is not a one-day event, y'all. I'm telling y'all right now, we will be back. This petition is a gateway to what we have to do. Just like they didn't believe in us when we took on Amazon, ain't nobody showed up. The labor movement, the politicians, the progressives, nobody showed up until we won. On the day we beat Amazon, we had $2 in our bank account. But the next day, our big brothers and sisters in the labor movement jumped on board and we had $500,000. That's fine and dandy, but money is not the answer, y'all. It's people power. So when people say, why we can't go into general strike in this country because we don't have the infrastructure, that is false. It's already here. The other countries that go on general strike, they do two things. They call an action and they shut up. They're not worried about mutual aid or how they're going to survive, because they know if they don't speak up and stop, it's going to continue to happen. The unions are leading the way for the general strikes in other countries. What are we doing here in the U.S.? Playing games? Doing parades on No Kings? It's bullshit. If they want to call a general strike, they have the power to do that right now. If they want to shut down the ports, it's a phone call right now. If they want to stop shipping weapons, they can do it right now. If they want to stop manufacturing weapons, they can do it right now. And guess what? What do the members want? To shut it down. If we don't get it, 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 if we don't get it,
shut it down.
What we're told, we don't get it,
shut it down.
Every damn time. So, I heard that they want to accept our petition. That's fine and dandy. This is a piece of paper. I don't really give a damn about a petition. Never did. Y'all gonna accept this petition, and I'm telling y'all now, for those who don't know, we put in this petition, in the letter that we're about to give them, that they have 1 week to respond. And if it was up to me, it'd be one day. But I'm gonna give them a 7-day grace period. They got 1 week, and for those who are up on the balcony that's ducking, those who's looking out the window, those who are over there behind the glass doors that's locked or zip tied, whatever they did, you got 1 week to respond to this petition.
One week.
1 week.
And guess what? We will be back. We will be back. We will be back.
Those were the voices from the 24 October Labor Rally for Palestine, demanding that the AFL-CIO formally oppose Israel's genocide in Gaza.
We knew in the 1980s, chaos, catastrophe was on the way. Plants shutting down like crazy. The moment was coming, that's here today. God's working class children and babies. The world's been stolen and laid to waste. Future generations gonna say to me, did you stand up and show your face?
Rise and fight, let's unite. Militant unions are what I like. Raise your voice, got no choice. Time for a general strike.
It started back with PATCO. Union busting ever since. After so many fiascos, I think it's time we got up the fence. From Amazon to Starbucks, UE teachers, auto workers showing the way. On picket lines and delivery trucks, solidarity's on display.
Rise and fight, let's unite. Militant unions are who I like. Raise your sign on the picket line. Time for a general strike.
Big Bill, Joe Hill,
I'm here to answer your call.
It's uphill until
it's only one work, one work for all.
That was Mike Stout. Time for a general strike. This is Pacificus Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Thomas O'Rourke. Sarah Nelson is the president of the 60,000-member Airline Flight Attendants Union, which is affiliated to the Communication Workers of America. She and fellow airline workers, including air traffic controllers, are facing a catastrophic situation because of the government shutdown. She joined others in calling for a general strike at the October 18th No Kings rally in D.C.
The current shutdown is incredibly ridiculous. There's two crises here, and it just takes one vote to solve them. We have the crises of the healthcare system about to go into a death spiral if we don't continue these subsidies by November 1st. Where the crises of the federal government shut down, not making sure that corporations can't poison our water, that we can eat clean food, that we can actually have air traffic controllers who are getting paid in order to direct our planes safely to the airports, that we can have TSA officers at our airports doing those security checks with all of the cybersecurity units and other reinforcements from other agencies to give them the intelligence to actually avoid a security threat. We have people who were curing cancers who are on furlough. Our government makes us free. And we need to reinstate the freedom of having a government that makes sure that we keep our communities safe. Federal workers are our friends and neighbor, they're our families, but they are also real everyday heroes. And right now, millions of them are on furlough, not getting a paycheck, and others are forced to come to work for free. Increasingly unsafe. Air traffic controllers today working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day to keep our system going because Ronald Reagan fired the air traffic controllers and disbanded their union in 1981. That put us on a death spiral in this country with inequality rising, wages staying flat, and productivity going into the pockets of Wall Street. That's why we are where we are today. And the air traffic controllers that came along after that and got hired formed their union again in a couple years. But they could be wiped off the map with the stroke of a pen. They are continuing to go to work, making good on the oath that they made to this country to keep all of us safe, but without a paycheck. And let me be clear, The Flight Attendant Union just in 2019 is looking very carefully about when this system is going to break, because it will break, and planes will stop, and people will not be able to get anywhere. Seniors will not be able to get their medicines. Veterans will not be able to get their medicines. We will not have a functioning economy at all very soon if there is not a vote called by Senator John Thune to solve two crises, healthcare and our federal workers coming back to work with a paycheck. That's what we need. Two crises, one vote, open the government today. And let me tell you something, if not, there is going to be a general strike, because before the system breaks, we are going to make sure that we take control as the people and the working people in this country. Thank you.
That was Sarah Nelson, president of the 60,000-member Association of Flight Attendants, which is affiliated with the 700,000-member Communication Workers of America. She spoke out at No King's Day in Washington, D.C. Abel Mouton is a staff attorney at Legal Assistance for the Elderly and a member of UAW Local 2023 in San Francisco. His unit voted to take work action on October 24th and picket San Francisco ICE offices. He spoke with Pacifica Steve Zeltzer about why. We'll also hear from Berta Hernandez, a member of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, about the need to support a general strike.
My name is Abel Preston Mouton. I'm a staff attorney at Legal Assistance to the Elderly, and I'm a member of UAW Local 2023, National Organization of Legal Service Workers, Legal Assistance to the Elderly Unit.
And your local or your unit has said that they're going to take this action on October the 24th. Why don't you talk about how that came about and why your union unit has decided to take that action?
We're a very diverse unit. A lot of our members are immigrants or have immigrants in their family. And so we drafted a resolution and we discussed it at the at one of our regular union meetings. And I think it was 2 months ago. Would that have been, I think it would have been the August meeting, and they unanimously endorsed it without very much discussion at all, because everyone's been watching this.
And there have been opposition to the military occupation, ICE raids in Chicago, New York, other protests. Do you think that the labor movement, the unions, are beginning to wake up to the fact that this fascist government is going to come after them, not just immigrants?
I hope so. I mean, the labor movement is stratified to some degree. There's a big difference between unionized workers and the labor leaders, for instance, and they have very different perspectives on society. The labor leaders tend to be very close with the Democratic Party and, in fact, be functionaries of the Democratic Party and militants, high-level militants for the Democratic Party, whereas the unionized workers, the rank-and-file members, are more invested in the community and are more part of the community. So I think there's a split there.
Are you going to make an appeal to Sean Fain, president of the UAW, to take action?
Absolutely. Sean Fain, we call on you to endorse this action and to endorse a general strike, to call the United Auto Workers out against Trump policies on immigration and on Palestine, among many other things. You will definitely have support in our unit.
To ship immigrants out of the United States, deport immigrants out of the United States on a mass basis, now that this infrastructure is being deployed in a way that we haven't seen before, at a new scale, and specifically with the intention of terrorizing the entire country, especially the immigrant population. And the only way to stop that, and a number of other policies, including the policies around climate change, is for the United States labor movement to use its organized might, as it has gotten out of the habit of doing since about 1947. We want to see the power of the labor movement rests on its ability to go out on strike against, typically for better wages and working positions, but the political strike against the actions of the government That's where the labor movement's real power comes from, is the ability to stop the economy and keep the and you know, against the policies that the government is perpetuating. In this case, immigrants and the undocumented immigrants are a very important sector of the United States working class, as well as being human beings who have the right to be here the same as anyone else. So we're calling the labor movement to call the general strike. The San Francisco Labor Council has promised that the deployment of troops in San Francisco would be something to which they would respond to with a general strike, and it's now time to do that. The troops are coming.
Hernandez, and I'm a member of the General Strike Committee for ICE out of the bay. They are coming for us. They are coming for people. It's like 100, at that moment was like 126 people taken from the San Francisco court since June. In 1 week, were like 6 people previous to that meeting. I mean, they are here. Work. We are trapped here in the United States. And this action, it was very successful in terms of calling the community and rank and file members of unions in saying that the only possible solution to all of this is a general strike. And not only for the question of immigration, but also for Palestine. We understand that only the power of the labor movement, but also the all workers that are not yet into unions or undocumented workers, communities at large, that we need to do a general strike in order to stop what is happening right now. And our experience has been that our leadership, they don't want to hear about a general strike. They don't want to hear about the strike. They have all these excuses and on requirements that they have been signed in contract negotiation, etc., of all the reasons why we cannot strike. And there is not any discussion that we can have with them that they can say, okay, but we could do this, we could change that, we should address that. No, all the time it's not possible. We cannot do it. It's almost prohibited. It's like it never existed in history. They are so terrorized with the word of general strike. So the action that we had today was very important for us because many of us at rank and file were out stating that what we need is a general strike, and we are coming back to our unions and workplace to continue advocating and fighting for this.
From San Francisco, those were the voices of Abel Mouton of UAW Local 2023, and Berta Hernandez of International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Economist Richard Wolff responded to calls for a general strike in a video published on X, October 22, 2025.
Welcome, friends, to another Wolff Responds. I call this one General Strike. Yes, I know that a general strike is something that is really about the labor movement. It's literally means that we have a strike of working people, that is, they refuse to work. But it's not working people in this or that industry. It's not working people for this or that employer. It's all working people. That's why they use the word general. It's a general strike of everybody. It shows you that the workers have a common issue and that they are determined to use their most powerful weapon, namely the refusal to do the work without which nothing's going to get produced. They want to now do it on a economy-wide level, and that's why it's called a general strike. They have happened throughout the history of capitalism when the working class was angry enough, abused enough, bitter enough to mobilize itself across different employments, different jobs, different regions, and pull off a general strike. Why am I talking about that with you today? Well, for several reasons, general strikes or things quite like them are popping up now in the world in very diverse places for different reasons, but there's something going on. And toward the end of this short message, I'll tell you what I think that is. But let me begin Last month, September, when this is being made, the French had a general strike. Now, it was unusual because it was called more by political parties and angry civilians, if you like, consumers, workers, and not so much by labor unions. But there was more than one day when there was the call out, and then the unions later on did participate, so it's close enough to be called a general strike. Across the country of France, estimates of 2 to 4 million French people, that is an enormous number. It would be in virtually any country, but remember, France is a much smaller country than the United States. 2 million people would be stunning in the United States. It's that much more stunning in France. They had a slogan, Bloquons tout, in French, which means let's block everything. And that's the kind of spirit that a general strike always has. It's when all the workers stop working, stop producing the goods and the services that the society depends on. It's a reminder of who does the work, not the supervisor, not the foreman, not the executives who sit in the offices pretending most of the time. No, no, the real workers, the ones standing all day, the ones in front of the machines, the ones being supervised. You know, that polite word for being hassled. So a general strike happened in September in France. And what was the demand of this strike? Very clear. The president of the country, Emmanuel Macron, had proposed, not for the first time, to deprive French citizens of a portion of the pensions they had paid into, committed to, passed laws guaranteeing. He wanted to change it all. He wanted to say you had to be 2 years older to be eligible to get it. That would deprive people, as they reached pension age, of 2 years that they were getting now and have been getting for many years. They would now not lose those 2 years because they wouldn't be eligible until they were 2 years older than used to be the rule. And the French people said, we don't want you to solve the economic problems you created and the business class of this country created by sticking it to us. We're the victims here. We're not the cause of the problem. And the rich, of course, don't care about their pensions. They have private pensions and don't need what the government provides. So you're hurting the people who need it and giving a pass to the people who wouldn't miss it. That's an unacceptable arrangement. And so the general strike, which often happens, went from a particular issue, in this case pensions, to the bigger issue. We want President Macron to go. We want a new, different government with a different policy. They did this twice in September. May have been at the very beginning of October. I don't remember the exact date. But it's close enough to be called a French general strike. But I promised you when I began that it wasn't only in one place, part of why it's a general topic. In the month of October, and in particular on October 3rd, the Italian people went on a general strike. There it began with the union, a particular union, the dock workers union, the working people who load and unload the ships in the port cities of Italy. Remember, Italy is a peninsula. It sticks out into the Mediterranean, so it has lots of ports. It's been an important shipping area for thousands of years. The dock workers said, we no longer will pick up the cargo or load the cargo on ships coming to or from Israel, having to do with the what they call the genocide in Gaza. In other words, this was a political general strike as well as an economic one. They weren't going to do the dock work, the union there, and they appealed to the other unions in Italy who felt strongly about what was going on far away in Gaza, not in Italy, in Gaza, to make it a strike that all workers would be called to join and would be directed against the policy of the government led by Meloni in Italy. And they had millions of workers go out, two different dates, shutting down Italy, the trains, the buses, all of it. The workers saying, no business as usual, some issues are so important. And notice, these are working people using their worker organizations, unions in particular, to make a political statement. Now the third one, October 18th, here in the United States, where I'm speaking to you from. We had millions of people going out into the streets in every one of our 50 states, in virtually all of our cities, some huge, like in New York City, some modest, like in small towns, but millions of people saying that the conditions here in the United States are unacceptable for working people. The prices are too high. The wages are too low. The affordability of everything is out of reach. The governments, both Biden and Trump, promised to do all sorts of things to fix it, but it isn't fixed. We're staring at a recession coming down the pike literally any day. We are upset. And then we have a government that is taking away our political freedoms on top of it. No, said millions of people, we're going into the streets. It's not a general strike in the sense that the unions haven't called their people out, but it is more than another demonstration, and it's more than a regular strike. It's moving in the direction, like Italy, like France, to mobilize everybody as a worker, as a consumer, as a citizen, to demand big changes. Basically, the French general strike targeted their government of Mr. Macron, and the Italian general strike targeted their government of Ms. Meloni, and the American approximation of a general strike targeted Mr. Trump and his government. And then there was, and he deserves being called on this, there was the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, who called for a general strike against the government of Mr. Trump because he is a president who is proudly sending the American army into the cities of America to try to control the people there against the will of the democratically elected leaders of these cities. In fact, he picks out those that were elected by the other political party. A level of abuse of power that is bringing millions of people into the streets. A strike is an enormously important weapon. It's what's available to working people when every other effort, bargaining, negotiating, pleading, job action, grievance filing, all the mechanisms have been exhausted, don't work, the employer won't meet you halfway. Well, the strike is then what's left to the workers if they're not going to knuckle under and do and accept whatever the employer wants to dish out. they can withhold their labor, reminding the employer that if the workers don't work, your enterprise becomes nothing. The machines don't work by themselves. The problems don't get solved unless there are people solving them. Of course, it hurts the worker who loses his or her income. It hurts the workers who lose an important part of their lives. But it is a step workers take to make the point, this really matters to us. And when it is raised to the level of a general strike, there should be a message learned. Something is going very wrong in the society. Millions of people feel that way. That has to be taken seriously. Now, of course, there are leaders who don't take it seriously. People, for example, who might put a crown on their head to make a video that makes it look as though they're defecating on the people who have come into the streets to show how concerned they are. Yep. But all that does, all it has ever done, is provoke those 2 million and the many million more who agree with them but didn't come out on Saturday to understand what they're up against. What kind of childish, bitter, hostile government reacts to the appeal of their own people for change in such a way? Leaders who do that usually discover, to their sadness, what comes. Macron is not long for his job. The French don't want him anymore, and everybody in France knows it. And Meloni lost a lot of the support she had by taking the position she did, scolding the millions of Italians who went to the streets because they're against genocide. Not good for her career at all. And the same applies to Mr. Trump. 20 seconds of a video that should never have been made will cost him, and it'll be much more than whatever weird pleasure he got from acting like an 11-year-old immature boy. The general strike is coming, and it tells us that the problems of our society are provoking mass action and reaction, and that that's what's coming down the pike, not the fantasies of Mr. Trump, and certainly not the solution to the problems his policies have so far not solved, and nor is that in the future for us either, according to everything we can see.
That was economist Richard Wolf responding to calls for a general strike in a video published on X, October 22nd of this year. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contributed to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective, with contributions from Steve Zeltzer, Thomas O'Rourke, Ann Garrison, and Polina Vasiliev. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at Pacifica CRD. I've been your host, Thomas O'Rourke. Thanks for listening.